Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. In retrospect, it seems clear Trump never really attempted to end the Ukraine conflict. In fact, it is a conflict he may not be allowed to end. The fighting will continue with Western support. Instead of peace, expect dangerous escalation. Crosstalking Trump and Ukraine, I'm joined by my guest, Dimitri Laskaris in Montreal. He is a lawyer and freelance journalist. In London, we have Scarlett Karoleva. She is a political commentator. And in Germany, we cross to Konstantin von Hofmeister. He is author of Esoteric Trumpism and Multipolarity, as well as founder and director of Multipolar Press. All right, Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Konstantin, let me start out with you in Germany. Obviously, all of us on this program and the people that view this program have been watching the conflict in Ukraine from 2014. That was the origins of this iteration of the conflict. And I'm very careful to kind of parse phases, okay? Because there's a lot of last legism out there. Ukraine's on its last legs, 2 months, 3 months. And so we've heard that for a long time, and people have kind of humiliated themselves. But with Trump proposing and canceling the Budapest summit, I see this as a shift. This, I think, a very discreet shift here, a new phase of the conflict. And that's what, do you agree with that? And would you agree with me that the goal, the original goal of the Ukraine project is to inflict a strategic defeat on Russia? That is still in play. New phase, same goal. Konstantin.
Well, of course, I completely agree. And I think it hasn't changed with the change of administration. I think the politics behind the scenes has pretty much always stayed the same. To be honest, I think Trump was probably sincere in wanting to make peace, just out of personal vanity, probably, because, I mean, he's an older guy, and I think he wants to leave a legacy. And I really think he does want the Nobel Peace Prize. And he's sort of proud of what he achieved, quote unquote, in Israel and Gaza. And I think he wants to sort of replicate the same in Ukraine. And he thought it would work by sort of strong arming Russia and basically threatening Putin. But of course, it's not going to work because the Russians still insist on their positions, basically. And Trump, I think, is also now being pressured by the Europeans to sort of shift course and try a new strategy, which the Europeans claim will pressure Russia into sort of making concessions falsely, in my opinion. And I suppose that Trump and certain war factions within his administrations are sort of like pressuring him into this new position.
Yeah, Scarlett, it seems, I said in my introduction, Trump may not be allowed to actually end this conflict. And I think that's coming to the fore more and more. He knows he can't win it. He doesn't want to be blamed for losing it. And it seems to me that he's shifting it more and more onto the Europeans, hoping that they could exhaust Russia. The problem with that whole theory of the case is that it hasn't worked to this point, and there's no evidence that it will work in the future. So it seems to be kind of a cul-de-sac strategy. He doesn't really know what to do, and he's just defaulting to the European position.
Well, I wouldn't go that far to say that he's giving up. It's very obvious that he has been persuaded by Europe. It's very obvious that the leaders of Europe, we talk, for example, about Ursula von der Leyen, of Merz, of Macron, they have been really prolonging the war. And Trump is following their style.
Well, Dimitri, what are your thoughts on that? I mean, because, again, as I said in my first question, I mean, I'm very careful in looking at different phases of this. But, you know, he's essentially turned away from any kind of diplomatic engagement with the Russians. And I think he does that at his peril. Dimitri.
Well, with the greatest of respect to our colleagues, I don't think Trump was ever sincere about this.
Dimitri, fair enough. But what is he sincere about? That, you know, we could go that far, too. But I get your point. Go ahead.
I don't think it's purely academic question. I think it's very important that we understand what Trump's agenda has been from the outset. And if you go back at the first administration, he was the first president to provide lethal weaponry to Ukraine. He took the highly provocative step of withdrawing the United States from the Intermediate Nuclear Forces Treaty. He, you know, refused to abandon the notion that Ukraine would become a member of NATO one day, a highly provocative move, as he undoubtedly understood. He comes into office. What does Pete Hegseth, who he now calls the Secretary of War, do? He goes off to Brussels within days of Trump returning to the White House and tells the Europeans, you need to ratchet up your military spending so that you can pay for providing weapons to Ukraine. We don't want to pay for it anymore, but we're happy to give you the weapons if you pay for them. So how is that an agenda of peace? There's never been an honest effort by the Trump administration to seek peace in Ukraine. What the Trump administration's trying to do is to freeze the conflict so that Ukraine can rearm and remobilize and rebuild its defenses in the part of the front line that it continues to control. That's what this is all about. And what happened to Donald Trump, there has been a shift. The shift is that Donald Trump realized that Vladimir Putin ain't buying it. He's not going to fall for the scheme. They've fallen for it before, and they're done with that. And this war will continue until the root causes have been addressed. And the reason why Trump won't do that is because the moment the root causes are addressed, the whole world will see that NATO has suffered a catastrophic strategic defeat.
Well, Constantine, that's exactly right, because what we see from the European media and politicians is a war fever that is not grounded in reality. I mean, it's really quite horrific, the kind of headlines that, I mean, you know, preparing for war. I mean, where is the preparation for diplomacy? Where is the preparation for engagement? I mean, they've already decided that they must continue with on the path of a catastrophic strategic defeat of Russia. I mean, there's nothing. It's a binary. It's either or. Constantine.
Well, I completely agree with you. The Europeans are not serious about making peace at all, and they're not serious about being diplomatic because they're making impossible demands. They're making demands that they know the Russians will not meet, like the 12-point program that they just came up with, you know, like freeze the conflict, basically, but do not recognize the Russian territories. So basically, they want the Russians to constantly be on the defensive while they still want to arm Ukraine, basically. And at the same time, they said we will maybe gradually lift some sanctions, but with a provision that Russia must follow our guidelines and our rules, basically, and meet our demands. So it's quite humiliating for Russia. I mean, the 12-point program, and they know very well that Russia will not accept it. That's why they're not serious. They're just doing it for the European public. They want to show to the European public, look, we have a serious peace plan, and Putin is the bad guy. Russia is the villain because they don't accept it. Russia doesn't want peace. That's what they want to sell to the European public when, of course, the opposite is true. They want to continue the conflict for as long as possible.
Well, Scarlett, one of the interesting things about this 12-point program, which I think that has been mentioned that Trump would be chairman of the board or something like that, obviously a kind of plagiarizing the Gaza plan, which is, I think, a farce in itself, but that's a topic for another program. But how does this all help Ukraine? Nobody really addresses that. How to inflict damage on Russia, of course, okay? How to keep the Americans engaged, that's always talked about. But how does any of this help Ukraine?
Look, I really want to go back to what we were discussing previously, because I don't think I was given a fair opportunity to make my point. I am a MAGA girl. I have a high esteem of President Donald Trump. I do think he has genuine intentions to put an end to this war. But we all know his negotiation style. He might be a little bit unpredictable. He might go in hard, but that's just how he's simply playing the game. It doesn't mean that he's walking away from his negotiations, because at the end of the day, every conflict will come down to having peace negotiations. But we do know that this is not something that is in line with the agenda of Brussels. It is not in line with the agenda of Ursula von der Leyen, of Merz, or of Macron. Coming back then to your 12-point plan, yeah, it seems to be a little bit out of touch. One of the things I was a bit shocked about, or not necessarily, is the fact that they want to have an accelerated access of Ukraine to the EU. Well, this simply isn't possible if you look at treaties. If you have a treaty of 1993, there's very clear specifics to what a country has to align with before they can enter the EU. They have to be viable economically. They have to have good political institutions. Let's face it.
Well, Scarlett, but that works under the assumption that the Europeans actually care about Ukraine, which I don't see any evidence of that. It is cannon fodder to damage Russia. I don't see this as anything for the Ukrainians. I mean, if they really cared about the Ukrainians, why don't they fight in Ukraine? They're not going to send any troops there. They're not going to do it. Let me go to Dmitry right now. I mean, I have to tend to agree with you, Dmitry. I mean, where are the diplomatic compounds that the Biden administration took away from the Russians? I thought that was part of, you know, rapprochement. None of these things have happened. None. Zero. Okay. And on top of it, again, the beginning of the program, this shift, the Trump administration is adding more sanctions that against Rosneft and Lukoil. It's the first major sanctions to come out of this administration. Is that a bargaining chip, Dmitry?
It certainly isn't a sign of a willingness to engage in a peace discussion. I mean, Russia has already been subjected, you know, to virtually every sanction known to humanity, 19 rounds of it from the European Union alone. So how this could be perceived by Russia as a sincere, you know, outreach for peace escapes me. But, you know, let's just recall, yes, Trump talks a lot about peace, no question about it. In fact, in my lifetime, I don't know any president who has talked as much about peace as this man. Okay, but he had a powerful motive to do that precisely because people like Scarlett want peace. They want an end to these forever wars. That's why they voted for Donald Trump, and that's why he made the promise. He was getting their votes, and as soon as he came into office, he betrayed it from day one. And as far as caring about the Ukrainian people, I'm sure you've all seen, I imagine you've seen this recent exchange that Mark Rutte, the Secretary General of NATO, sitting beside Donald Trump, had with a reporter who said the level of support for this war in Ukraine is now down to something like 23%. Do you think that, providing more weapons to Ukraine is going to bring that to an end? And Rutte had no, he's literally babbling incoherently. He simply avoided the.
Well, that's what he's good at. OK, he's the daddy man. All right. I'm going to jump in here, folks. We're going to go to a short break. And after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on Ukraine. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. To remind you, we're discussing Ukraine. Okay, let's go back to Constantine. You know, Dmitry mentioned in the first part of the program that he's never heard of a president talk about peace so much. And rhetorically, I agree with that. But it's a ceasefire is not peace, okay? It's not a peace in Gaza. That's far from over. As a matter of fact, I think it's not even the beginning of the end. But again, that'll have to unfold. Calling for a ceasefire in Ukraine isn't ending the conflict. It's not addressing why the conflict happened in the first place. So given that at least this stage, by the end of this recording, Trump can change his mind. We all know that. But Constantine, moving forward, what I worry more about is not, you know, when there's going to be the next meeting. What I worry about escalation. Go ahead.
Well, of course, there's always room for escalation. And especially now, with Trump previously saying that he might give Tomahawk missiles to Kiev and now saying he probably won't, and Russia responding, that's basically a red line, and there will be a very serious response because it's basically the cut and lose scenario. Like if he delivers the Tomahawk systems to Kiev and Kiev actually uses the Tomahawks and attacks Moscow, for example, I think the reaction time will be seconds, right, for the Russians. And the Tomahawks could have a nuclear warhead and the Russians don't know that. So they call it, I think it's like they have to decide within seconds what to do. And that is a very, of course, a very dangerous and very risky scenario because they might possibly think they're nuclear and they might push the wrong button. And I think Trump or the Trump administration is probably aware of the danger and the kind of gamble that they're engaged in. So I think it's a very risky business. I mean, just a continuation of the war itself. And I think the Europeans are especially pushing for it. I think also for ideological reasons, because the Europeans, they want, or the Westerners in general, they still want to pretend that they are order, the democratic liberal order, is the global order and not just a regional order, basically. They don't want to have a proper settlement instead of a ceasefire, because that would basically force them to admit that multipolarity is a new reality in the world. And multipolarity basically settled the conflict. And that's why they want to prolong it, because they want to show that their order, their way, is the only way, the liberal democratic way, basically.
Scarlett, do you see Trump signing off on this 12-point program that is being put together by the Europeans? Because that would be a moving in an opposite direction of what we saw in Anchorage. I mean, he was asked repeatedly about a ceasefire, and he said, no, not a ceasefire. We need to deal with the root causes. Now he's back at the ceasefire thing. I mean, I wasn't there. None of us were there. But when Marco Rubio was talking to Sergei Lavrov, I think he said, OK, we're all set to meet. We're going to meet in Budapest. All you have to do is agree to a ceasefire. And I'm, you know, and the Russian side, I thought we already been through this. That's why it seems like diplomacy and negotiation is falling apart, because the American side keeps changing its position.
I want to think about it before I come back. But one of the day, I hear all of these connotations, and I really want to make a clear statement. Look, you can say about President Donald Trump what he wants. At the end of the day, he's the person who was actually picking up the phone to call and meet President Putin, which would have never happened under President Biden. So maybe it has been installed for a while, but at the same time, I wholeheartedly believe that President Trump is looking for a way moving forward.
Okay, Dmitry, do you want to jump in there and react to that?
Sure. I'm really happy that he picked up the phone. God help us all if, you know, we had gone down the path that Biden chose, which was basically treat the leadership of the Russian Federation, the elected government, as a pariah. These are two nuclear armed states, and they should be talking. So I will be the first to say, congratulations, Donald, for reestablishing diplomatic contact with Russia. But I think the reason why he did that is because Donald thinks that his powers of persuasion and his charisma are so immense that he was going to pull the wool over Vladimir Putin's eyes again, just like the Europeans did with the Minsk Accords. And he found out the hard way that it ain't happening. So that's why he's now abandoned the rhetoric of peace. But it was just rhetoric at the end of the day. We should judge the man by his actions. And his actions all over the world, not just in Ukraine, from the very beginning of his first administration to this day, stink of warmongering. That's why he put Marco Rubio in as Secretary of State. Anybody have any doubts what Marco Rubio wanted to happen? He wanted the war in Ukraine to continue. And what about Hegseth? What about Mike Waltz? All these other characters he populated his cabinet with. Nobody put a gun to his head and said, you got to make these people members of your cabinet. And the last thing I want to say is I don't want to sound disrespectful, but I laugh when people say, you know, the Europeans persuaded Donald Trump to do anything. I don't think he gives a damn about what Starmer or Macron or Merz think. You know, when he said jump, they said, how high, Donald? Do you want us to go to 5% of military spending, ruin our economies, bankrupt our nations, cause unrest in the streets? Sure, no problem. They are vassals. They don't persuade Donald of anything. They take orders and they obey.
Yeah, Constantine, Dmitry's right. I mean, we all remember that Oval Office meeting when they all sat in front of him like school children, and it seemed like he was going to get his way. And then we see this reversal of, you know, he almost kind of the way I look at it is that he sees everything as a potential win. If he doesn't get his win, then he moves away from it, okay? And so it looked like he was in this very strong position. We all remember a short time ago with the second Zelensky meeting, where nobody met him at the airport. There was no red carpet. You know, it was a very, very cold shoulder. And then within 24 hours, 36 hours, we see this reversal. So, I mean, I don't know what the power dynamic is now between the Europeans and Trump. Go ahead, Constantine.
Well, of course, the Europeans are vassals, obviously, especially Germany. And as you said, the scene at the White House pretty much told us everything we need to know about the relationship between the United States and the European powers. I think it has to do also with a sort of faction dynamic within the administration, because Trump is neither king nor emperor, so he's not all powerful. He doesn't make all the decisions, so he has to listen to the military industrial complex, because there's a lot of influence, and he also has to consider what is good actually for the American people and maybe what is good for the American economy. And maybe he wants to make money by continuing to deliver weapons, basically. So if he has even if you have a ceasefire and you have a frozen conflict, you can still deliver weapons, you can still sell weapons to the Europeans that the Europeans then can sell to the Ukrainians. I mean, in an ideal world, because we all know it's a proxy war, basically, between the United States and Russia. And Ukraine by itself has no agency. And neither really do the Europeans. In reality, I mean, I was very hopeful when it all started in Istanbul, the talks between the United States and Russia. I wish they would have kept it like this, which is basically Russia and the United States talking and settling the conflict. And basically, the United States just telling Zelensky what to do, because that's what's happening anyway behind the scenes.
If Marco Rubio called Lavrov and say, hey, maybe we should get this meeting in Istanbul on again. Well, what do you think the Russians are going to say? They're going to say, are you serious?
Well, I would hope that they would say that, because I think the writing's now on the wall. But they might say, and, you know, there is a rational basis to continue the discussion going, if for no other reason than to minimize the risk of a nuclear war. But I can't imagine that Sergei Lavrov or Vladimir Putin or Dmitry Medvedev or anybody in the National Security Council of Russia thinks that these people are going to address the root causes of this conflict. I think they now understand. You know, I just want to go back to 2016 when Donald Trump won that election, okay? It emerged, and it's since been forgotten, that Trump hired some very sophisticated people to examine voter preferences in the United States and to use massive amounts of data to craft messages that appeal to particular constituencies. And that was a big part of the reason why he overcame that very undesirable candidate, Hillary Clinton. I think what happened here was some very smart people in the Trump campaign, whom you've never even heard of, did the analysis and said to him, you want to win this election with all your baggage? You need to talk about peace. You have to go on and on and on about peace. That's how you're going to get enough independents to vote for you. That's how you're going to get those mega influencers and so forth to support you. They want to see an end to the forever wars. So he went with that horse, and he went all the way to the finish line with it. And now he has a political problem. And the political problem is he developed an expectation he was going to bring these wars to an end. So he's got to put on a show of trying to bring peace, when the reality is, as I say, I think it's absolutely clear, he just wants a ceasefire because Ukraine is going down. And he doesn't want it to go down on his watch.
Konstantin, you got 1 minute. Finish it off for us.
Well, I just wanted to say that even if the Russians and the Americans would talk together again to reach some sort of agreement, I don't know what exactly the Americans can actually offer the Russians in terms of concessions. They could say, for example, we could lift some sanctions or we could make some trade deals. But all of these would have to be temporary or short term because of the bipolar, and I mean this in a clinical sense, nature of the American political system, because there's another 3 years of the Trump administration. And if they make a deal that lasts longer than 3 years, the next administration might just rip it up, basically. And the Russians are very well aware of this, because Lavrov even said once that the Americans are basically agreement incapable. And I think that's one of the main problems.
Yeah, we saw that with the JCPOA, and that set a precedent. It'll be very, very hard to trust any kind of major agreement or treaty coming out of an American administration, probably for a very long time. That's all the time we have. I want to thank my guests in London, Montreal, and in Germany. And of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, Crosstalk Rules.